It's time to Talk It Over, starring Diane Diamond, Lee J. Berman, and Louise Palanker. Give us a call at 888-531-7171. Email us at talkitover@gmail.com. Join us online at talkitoverradio.com. Because we're ready to talk it over.
Welcome to Talk It Over. We are the show about conflict and resolution and all of the interesting and fascinating stuff that happens in between. In Los Angeles, I am Louise Palanker, and I am here in the studio with mediator Lee J. Berman. How are you doing, Lee J.?
I'm great, Louise. How are you?
And on the East Coast, we have journalistic phenom Diane Diamond. How are you, Diane?
Phenom. I love that. Ready to solve some conflicts, two people at a time.
Really, really good. We are here to talk it over, and we really listen. So let's get into it. What have we got going on this week in the news, Diane?
I love the news. You know that. And how can you not like the story about actor-comedian Andy Dick? He has, of course, gotten himself arrested again. No big surprise there. This time, he allegedly fondled a teenage girl outside a chicken restaurant in Murrieta, California. Of course. Where else would it be?
Definitely, right? Moving down the food chain, isn't he?
If he's going to be touching a breast, can't it just be a chicken breast? He's already...
Exactly.
Come
well,
on,
that's
Andy.
The allegation.
Come
that
on.
He pulled down her tank top and, no surprise, of course, Andy Dick was reported to have been found intoxicated and with drugs in his pocket. So what is this, like the umpteenth chance he's gotten, Louise?
This guy is just a ball of trouble. I don't know. He's a wobbly dude, but, you know, he's hilarious. I enjoy watching him. There's a lot of people in Hollywood that I don't know if it's self-esteem or what it is, but they can't seem to have a clear-headed evening. Let's just put it that way.
I would say about that. Andy Dick's acting career that he can't even get arrested, except that's about the only thing he's able to do.
Well, the people that are only at peace, out of peace, who are they and why? You must deal with people like this all the time, Lee J. What do you make of that type of personality?
You mean the people who have to be in an altered state so they can feel normal?
Not just an altered state, but causing chaos that they're only comfortable in a chaotic world, and so if there is none, they create some.
We call them professional litigants in my business. They're the ones you see who are just constantly suing or being sued, and the court system is like their home away from home. It's how they act out in their world. They sue every store, every manufacturer, every everything, or they mess with everybody so that everybody's lined up outside their door to sue them.
It's a form of attention.
It is. It's using that as a threat, as a device, we call it the crazy man negotiation strategy. If you're negotiating with somebody and you're trying to make some peace with them, or you're trying to work a deal with them or settle a business conflict or something, they pull the crazy man card, which is to heck with you, sue me, or, you know, I'm going to sue you. And that's their fight or flight threat. Which it is,
well,
for most
I think, though, too, here, the big elephant in the room is that he obviously has some sort of substance abuse problem. And how many people out there must have family members who have that kind of a problem? If it gets this out of control, though, Lee J., is there any way to talk it over with somebody like that?
Oh, absolutely. You've all seen on television reenactments of the intervention where the family sits down with a professional intervener and says, and then the interveners coach them and say, here's what we want you to do when you talk it over with them. What you have to do is make it about yourself, not about them. Because if you make it about them, they're going to be defensive and they're going to deflect and they're going to point at everybody else who's to blame for their problems.
But how do you make it about you?
Well, all right, let's just say for a minute that you, Diane, of all people, had a substance abuse problem, okay?
Me?
Let's pretend.
No, no.
Diane, that's why we've gathered you.
Oh, no.
We have something.
That second glass of wine, right?
Yeah, that you almost finished, right?
Right.
So I would say to you something that's about me, like, Diane, first about how I feel about you. Diane, I need you to know that...
Yes, we love you.
I would say to you,
I get it.
Diane, you matter to me, and it hurts me to watch what I see you going through, and I need you to know how much I care about you and how much our professional working relationship means to me, that if... And then I'm going to say,
wait, can I be Diane for a second? Okay. Because Diane's in there going, you don't care. This is my life. If you don't care, if you care about me, then let me have my life. This doesn't have nothing to do with you. This is me that I'm making these choices, and screw you all.
Okay, so what I'm going to say is,
that's what Andy Dick would say. Okay,
okay,
let's go back to Andy.
Okay. Diane would say, "Excuse me, this is my existence. I am very
pardon me. There's the
door. Preoccupied with my own obligations."
Okay, so what I'm going to say is, Andy, you need to understand that because I care about you, it hurts me because when you and I are supposed to go out and have a nice quiet evening, and it ends up in all of this manufactured drama, and the police are taking you away, you and I can't just hang out together and go get some chicken wings or have a beer or something like that. It's got to always end up like this. And so it makes my life more difficult because I'm the one who has to wait around till 4 o'clock in the morning to bail you out of prison and to do all of these things. And Andy, right. I don't want that to be our friendship. Can't
well, then don't
we just
hang out with me. I don't care. Go.
And
that's what the person, I'm being
right,
the person.
Right,
I'm
of course.
Andy.
Yeah.
And
not
quite
Diane.
Well, I'd say.
Not Diane so much because she really wouldn't do that,
so
but
that,
Andy would.
At that point, I'm going to say, Andy, that is one of the options. But I don't want to be out of your life. I want to be in your life, but I need to be in your life in a healthy way.
Do you think Andy has any healthy friends? He probably does, though, because he's in the improv world. So I take it back. He probably does. So
yeah.
Is that what his...
Right, because that's where the healthy people hang out.
Well, no, a lot of them...
Sorry, Louise.
Yeah.
I don't know, though, because I saw the video of him. I saw some video of him, not this particular instance. But, you know, he's surrounded by these people, and they're all standing in an alley, and they're drinking, and they're smoking what, I don't know, whatever it was they were smoking. And when he falls down and goes out of control, they pick him up and actually carry him to a car.
Wow.
Like to get him out of there. So I guess, you know, there are people in his sphere that do, quote, care about him. But
here's the thing with a guy like Andy. I'll tell you what the thing is with a guy like Andy. A guy like Andy, he's got a lot of really cool professional friends that he works with who really appreciate his personality, his talent. And then he's got his low life drinking, smoking, partying buddies.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's caught in the middle. I found that drug addicts really only hang out with other drug addicts as people to hang out with when you're doing drugs, and it's never really about the person. You're not with the person for the person. They're not your real friends.
And clearly what we're talking about here is addiction. I mean, this is a guy who can't have a drink and be okay. He always ends up falling down, being carried away, or doing something to make a complete fool of himself and breaking the law. That's just somebody who needs to be in a program and needs to get himself straightened out. You know, that's not something where a friend of his on that friend's own can sit down and talk it over with him. That's going to need a huge intervention. It's going to need some rehab time. It's going to need something to keep him on the straight and narrow because his life is out of control, not unlike a Britney Spears or somebody else. I mean, that's how out of control he is at this point.
Well, and if Robert Downey Jr. can clean himself up,
yeah.
I would think Andy Dick could too. You know, it's just so sad to me. And another thing I saw in the news this week that was really sad was about Madonna's brother. I don't know if you guys saw this. Christopher Chacon is his name.
Oh, I thought it
was Meduta. What's that?
Never mind. Madonna's brother, I thought it would be called.
You're not starting to sing or
Meduta.
Okay, anyway. Christopher Chacon has written a book.
Oh,
and
Christopher.
It reveals some really juicy family secrets about his famous sister. Real talking out of school stuff, you know, about her husband and her religion and what makes her tick. He was on ABC News. I want you to listen to this now. He was talking with correspondent Deborah Roberts, and she got out of him what he really, really dislikes about Madonna's husband, Guy Ritchie. Listen to this.
What happened to your relationship?
Guy Ritchie pretty much happened to our relationship for the most part.
I mean, between the two of you?
Yeah. I mean, he did. It was, I think, his intention to. The best way to get to my sister is to get in bed with her. You know what I mean? And since I wasn't doing that, I wasn't about to, you know, that person, like I said, who speaks to her, the last person to speak to her at night, has the most influence. And we both couldn't really exist in the same hemisphere.
Ooh. So
there's
some
jealousy in that that I heard?
Absolutely.
What did I hear?
Oh, yeah. That's...
Yeah. You talk about your own sister like that and you write a book. I mean, you know, what do you do with a family member like this who you love in your heart but you hate in your head for all the secrets that they're telling. You know, everybody's got one in their family, I guess.
Yeah. First of all, listening to that clip, Diane, what I'm hearing is two alpha dogs who there wasn't room for both of them in her life, and they both had to be number one in her life. And when you have a woman who is as strong and powerful and successful and wealthy and everything else as Madonna is, these guys want to be close to her. And it's almost like her brother was saying, if I can't be closer to you than your husband, then I'm going to spill the beans on you. And he did. But but that was all about ego and who she loves more and all that sort of thing.
Okay, let me ask you this question then, Lee Jade. Let's say that's the kind of thing going on in your life and you're Madonna. And, you know, few of us are Madonna. I'm not trying to imply that more than one person could possibly be.
All that is
Madonna. But let's say you your brother and your husband don't get along, but your wife and your sister. What do you do? It's probably to the people that you love the most. What could Madonna have done to have helped, or was it her responsibility even to have given them both the attention that they needed?
It's her choice. First of all, she has the choice to say, look, this is childish. It's ridiculous. I'm not getting in the middle of this. I love you both. I'm out of here. I gotta go to work or whatever. And someone's feelings are going to be hurt. On the flip side, she has the ability to sit down. And, you know, I did a mediation like this once where a guy came to me and a lawyer I work with who said, my wife and my mother aren't talking to each other anymore and I can't take it. I want to bring you in to mediate between them. And we spent a whole day together. So, that's a choice too. That's the opposite extreme. That's bringing somebody else from the outside in to intervene. But to answer Wheezy's question, what Madonna can do, she has to say, these are the reasons I love you. And these are the reasons that I love you. And I don't love you one more than the other. It's just like a parent talking to two children. I don't love you one more than the other. But what I really need is some peace in my life and some peace in my relationship with both of you. Brother, if you feel like we're not as close as we used to be, let's talk about that. Tell me what kind of closeness you want. Obviously, I'm living on another continent at this point. Let's figure out how to keep our relationship. It won't be like it was. It can't be. But let's figure out how to make it work for you. And that's the discussion she has to have with him.
Okay.
Well, I think, too, the problem is basically here, according to Chacone, to Christopher Chacone, Guy Ritchie does not like homosexuals. And Christopher Chacone is a homosexual.
He's so married to Madonna. How can you not like homosexuals? It's her fan base. That's insane.
Her and Judy Garland, I don't know how their husbands couldn't like gay. I don't know. But when it's that deep, Lee J, can you ever really sit them down and talk it over? Or do you just, like you say, should Madonna just have walked away from it?
Well, there's really no should. She always has the right to walk away. But the truth is there's always a way to talk it over. Now, it's not a simple conflict resolution conversation. It's not a simple mediation when it's about somebody's deep-seated feelings about something. If somebody has a value system and deep down in their core just despise something in the other person, that takes a whole lot more work and probably all kinds of counseling.
But do you think it's true?
I don't know.
It sounds like a crazy accusation to me.
Doesn't matter to me if it's true. You know, for me, I need to help them figure out if it's me and I'm involved, how to have the conversation. And to me, how they should talk it over is she needs to sit with her husband and say, look, I don't care how you feel about his lifestyle. I don't care how you feel about him as a person. He's my brother. He's always going to be a part of my life. I need you at least just to make peace with it. Can you just not act out and treat him that way? Can't we just be in the same room and be grown-ups and hold your beliefs if you need to, but he's my brother. You have to at least have peace with him. Or
I wonder what Kabbalah has to say about that. All right.
I think we have a caller on the line. Who's on the phone, Matthew?
We've got Larry on the line. Hello, Larry.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for calling Talk It Over. How can we help?
Well, I have actually a very simple question. I'm just curious if you think it's all right to kill someone if they're very, very old and they'd be dying soon.
I don't think murder is euthanasia usually is the best course of action.
All right, let's not all jump in at once now.
If you have them provoke you, and then you can claim self-defense.
Well, I think that goes without saying. I wouldn't be calling your show if I hadn't been provoked past all reasonable expectations.
All right, so what's going on?
Well, yeah, there's got to be more to this than that, right?
That's funny you should say that. Yes, of course, there's a little bit more, but it's one of those situations that I guess maybe a lot of people are in, and you never think it's going to be you, but...
Tell us about it, Larry.
Well, my folks are getting older all the time, like everybody else, and...
Wait, so am I.
Yeah, well, that's what I say. You never think this is going to happen, and then, you know, they've been very independent all their lives and very competent and able to take care of themselves, and now they're both in their 80s, in their mid-80s, and they're increasingly not equipped to be able to take care of themselves and everything else. And that isn't such a big surprise, I guess, but they are just not going to hear that on any level. And so everybody, sort of including myself, is doing everything they can to make it so that they can live the way they want and remain in their home and have people to help them and caretake them in their home so they don't have to move into assisted living. And as their mental state and as their health gets more and more fragile, they become sort of more irrational.
So, Larry, let me just jump in and ask you, what is it that you want to have a discussion with them? I mean, tell me how you want to set this up for them, with them.
Well, what I'd really like to discuss is the idea that they might be happier and they might be safer and they might be better taken care of if they were to at least consider the idea of moving into assisted living.
Okay, so let me just jump in, Larry. Structurally, here's what I'm hearing. You want to have a conversation with them about a solution that you have in mind, which means you want to have a conversation with them trying to persuade them into your solution.
The problem is, when people are calling me in the middle of the night and everyone's hysterical and everything's out of control because situations and parameters they've set up, then they forget that they set up.
So here's what has to happen, Larry. You've got to have a conversation with them, not about solutions first, but about your interests first. And you've got to say things like, I'm beginning to get concerned for your safety. I'm beginning to get concerned for your well-being. And I know that you're going to tell me that you're fine, but what I need you to hear is that I'm not fine. And we've got to have a conversation about what to do to figure out a way for us all to be okay with this. Because I love you. I can't not love you. And I'm the one that gets the phone calls in the middle of the night. And I don't think that my phone not ringing in the middle of the night is the answer to the problem. I think we have to figure out a way so that you guys are okay and I know you're okay, and let's talk about that. And that'll make them more open to hearing what your concerns are. Because if you walk in the door with a solution and say, how about we try this my way, that they're going to resist, especially if they're independent, as you're describing them.
Right. Well, this is extremely good advice, I think, that you're suggesting. It's extremely good. And the only problem that I have, and I'm hoping that you have some clever ideas about it, is that sometimes trying to broach the topic in the way you've suggested, they don't have any memory of anything being wrong.
And Larry, is anybody else taking care of them? Are they under a doctor's care or anything else?
Well, you mean...
Because I'm concerned about the lack of memory. If you have a conversation with them and you all arrive at a decision and they wake up the next morning and don't remember it, that's a problem.
That's a
life safety problem.
Right. You're absolutely pinpoint. I mean, that's exactly the problem. And here's where it gets so frustrating and crazy making, is that it's not like in a movie, you know, where everyone's character is very continuous and consistent. It's that sometimes from day to day they remember something, and they remember a conflict, or they remember a problem. Next day, I don't know what you're talking about. You're making this up.
So, Larry, here's what has to happen. One of two things. Either you can go about making a record of it and a tape recording and play it back for them and all that, but all that's going to do is depress them Mm-hmm. Once you prove to them that they really don't remember it, that's just going to shake their own confidence in themselves and make them more reactive. At this point, I'm going to urge you to take more control over the relationship. If they're your parents, and there's a time where you, when people start not to remember things and to have these mood swings you're describing, and you know, to think that you're lying about a conversation that you had with them yesterday, that's time to have a conversation with a good attorney and think about a conservatorship or something like that, so that you have a little bit more power in the relationship. Because if they're that unstable, it's not an equal bargaining table, and you can't just sit and talk it over with them, because they're not capable of acting on what was discussed or remembering it the next day. So somebody's not capable for any reason at all, you've got to step in and take a little bit more control if you're acting out of a place of concern, and it sounds like you are.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think you're right. And I think the thing that's the most painful about this and the most seems so difficult to find some way to deal with the situation is that all your life you deal with somebody and they're a certain way.
Yeah.
Then at the very end of their life, suddenly that all starts to disappear, and everyone is left with the most recent memories of crazy making and difficulty, and forget all the good memories.
You do in this moment, Larry, because you are in the middle of this, but I promise you, when this has passed, you will suddenly and immediately revert to all of your sweet and loving memories of your folks. I promise you.
Yeah. And Larry, producer Trish is going to get your number. We'll talk more off the air, because there's a lot more we can discuss about this.
Great.
Well, thank
you so much for calling in, Larry.
Thank
really
you
appreciate
very much.
It.
And hang in there.
All right.
Hang in there.
Yeah, hang
right.
in there. Boy, how many of our listeners are in a situation like that?
All
with
of the boomers.
Older parents who live a lot longer than they used to. And
all the boomers.
Oh, your heart bleeds for him. Hey, we've got an email here from Steve in Playa Vista, California, came into the Talk It Over email box. I live in a neighborhood where the houses are all very close, he writes, and I work from home. My neighbors see my car and come by at all times during the day just to chat and have a cup of coffee or a beer, and sometimes I can't get rid of them. If it's not that, then they leave their dogs out barking all day. One guy opens up his garage and uses his power tools and does his woodworking. I don't want to be rude here, but how do I talk it over with them and let them know, hey, I'm working in here?
You're going to need a bullhorn, because he's got the power tools going.
Sounds like all he has to do is stand in his driveway and say it in a normal voice tone, and they'd all hear him.
No kidding.
Well,
those houses must be close.
There has to be a meeting of the neighbors, whether or not there's a homeowners association in place. There has to be a meeting of the neighbors where they sit down around a kitchen table in somebody's place and say, we're all going to have to coexist better than we are. And everyone's going to have to talk from their interests. The guy who wants to work with his power tools is going to have to say, hey, this is my hobby. I'm retired. I like to work on boats in my garage or whatever. And they have to say, well, you know, can we talk about the noise, though? Is it possible you can close your garage? And they have to negotiate back and forth with everybody. And they have to minimize the amount of blame that they're throwing around. You know, well, my power tools aren't as loud as his dog. If he could shut that dog up, you know, that's just a waste of time.
Sounds like probably everybody has a great time in that neighborhood except him, because he's using his house for a purpose it's not intended, business.
Well, you know, there are two schools of thought. Yeah, he may not be zoned to have a business in his home, but by the same token, he's entitled to the quiet enjoyment of his residence. And the whole way the law works on this is you're entitled to swing your arms and make as much noise as you want to until you're swinging your arms in somebody else's space or your noise is interfering with their quiet enjoyment. So the truth is you don't have the right to put the barking dog out in the backyard all day long when you go to work and bother all the neighbors who stay home. So that's the kind of discussion they need to have, not about what they're entitled to do, but what they have to do to coexist and live together in this neighborhood.
Yeah, I would say next time they come over for a beer, say, hey, you know that power tool you used for 2 hours and 41 minutes today? It really bugged me.
You know what?
Again,
I think
that's my direct way of dealing with it.
What I think really helps with noise and with neighbors is to put parameters around it, because I have much more peace of mind if I know that this guy is going to stop playing his trombone, you know, at 10 p.m. Then I go, oh, it's another another hour of trombone. I can handle that, because you know it's going to stop at some point. So if you say to Power Tool Boy, hey, listen, you can rivet and solder between the hours of, you know, noon and five. And after that, we're going to have dinner and we need to talk around the table. So
it's just important that he doesn't perceive that you're trying to say you can only do it. I say you can only do it between noon and five. It's got to be.
You say it like, what would be good hours for you? You know?
It's exactly. It's got to be a discussion about what works for everybody. And out of that communication, then you reach some agreements that everybody opts into voluntarily rather than feeling like someone's clobbering them over the head with a sledgehammer.
So that everyone feels vested into it?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And ideally, this one meeting is to resolve the conflict. And that's why people have to feel like they're being listened to so that they don't feel like they want to go underground and make more conflict for that other neighbor next week because he made me mad at that meeting. You know, that's the stuff that festers.
And they feel like they had a part in the solution.
Yeah. So they've got to talk it over openly and together and all have a part in the solution. Exactly right, Louise.
All right. Do we have
or
any other?
You could sneak into the garage and cut the cord to the power tools. I'm just saying.
Or kill Larry's parents.
Let's go to the phones.
Instead, let's just go to the phones. Do we have a caller? Oh, Nicola's on the line. Are you there, Nicole?
I'm here.
Hi. How can we help you?
All right. I am having a problem with. I have a 12-year-old son, and his best friend's mom is a very bad driver. And I've come up with every excuse I can think of for my son not to be in the car with them. But I'm running out of excuses, and I don't know how I can tell her in a tactful way that I don't want my child in her car.
Well, let's hear some of those excuses first. What kind of things did you roll out?
Oh, it'll be things like if she offers to pick him up, I'll say, no, I'm going right by there anyways. I'll bring him. That
as you run across town. That's beautiful.
He's on the road with his reggae band.
Nicole, can I just tell you something? It's Diane here. You are absolutely within your bounds to feel the way you do. And I will tell you a very quick story. I'm 8 years old. I walk home from school from Mark Twain Elementary in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And my marching orders were to not go home, but go next door and stay with Edith, the woman who babysat me after school. She had a young son and a young daughter. One day, Edith decides to load us all up into her big Cadillac with no padding on the front dashboard and go down to Baskin-Robbins for ice cream, except Edith was hammered.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely hammered right after school, and she plowed us into a telephone pole going at a really high rate of speed, and it knocked all my teeth out. And it made me cross-eyed for about 3 months.
Now, my eyesight came back fine,
but I am left with caps on all my teeth because of that. So remember Edith, Nicole, next time you're feeling guilty.
But can I tell my friend that I think she's a bad driver, or do I just keep coming up with
excuses? That's the mediator, Lee J.
Yeah, you really have to. You've got to. I mean, I'm assuming that you know this from driving in the car with her and things.
Yes.
Okay, so you've got to sit her down. Yeah, you know, this is another one of those kitchen table conversations where you've got to sit her down and say, there's something really serious I've got to talk with you about. And she'll say, oh my goodness, what? And you'll say,
you drive like Stevie Wonder.
Bad out of hell, man.
And you have to say, the way that I've seen you driving just concerns me because you've got my son in the car and you need to know how important he is to me. And I've bitten my tongue, but I got to talk to you about this. You're just not a really good driver. You know that, don't you? And see what she says and say it in a compassionate way and like you're her dear friend and you care about her and say something like, it just makes me nervous to have, you know, my son riding with you. And
that's good language. Lee J.
Yeah.
That's really good advice.
I mean, you've got to be straight with her. You've got to tell her how you feel, Nicole, and you got to give her an opportunity to answer. And I will bet more than half of the probability is that she'll say, oh, I know I get a little out of control sometimes, but, you know, I'll do better or something like that. And you've got to decide in your own gut in talking with her, not just giving in, but that you really do believe that she's going to do something to get better or pay more attention. Or you've got to say, you know, look, please don't take this personally. I love you, and I know our sons play together or whatever, but I'm going to ask you not to, you know, I'm going to ask him not to go with her. I'll pick him up myself or something like that. You've got to offer an alternative solution if your gut tells you that it's just not working.
Or you know what would be a good Christmas present is airbags.
Or a bicycle. Yeah, but do I would really, you know, so many times our professional mediator here at Lee J. Berman starts his advice with, you got to sit her down.
Yeah.
You got to sit him down. You got to have that talk. And boy, Nicole, I can't think of anything more important than keeping your kids safe. Even if you lose this woman as your friend, mm-hmm. who cares
yeah.
if your kid is safe?
And you know, Nicole, the old it's not you, it's me thing.
Right.
You can always say, I don't know what it is, but every time my son's in the car with you, I can't sleep at night. I can't rest easy. You know, just for my own sake, I don't know what it is about me, but I'm just whacked when he's in the car with you. So, you know, don't think me too weird, but if it sounds like I'm not letting you pick him up now and then, I've just got something weird in my own head that's just got me triggered. And if it's okay with you, I'm just going to pick him up myself. Because I can't have another sleepless night or whatever. And just take as much of it on your own shoulders as you want to.
Mm-hmm.
If you think she's the type to get offended.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you before you go, can you do this? Does it sound like it makes sense to you?
I have to think about it. I'm going to think about it. I'm going to take your advice very seriously.
Good.
Let me ask
you. Let us know what happened.
This is very important. It really
is
very important because there's a lot of things we do in life that we take for granted, but they are actually really dangerous, life-threatening, potentially things.
Hey,
like driving or crossing a street or, you know, we kind of take for granted that everybody's going to do this every day. And yet, if you don't give enough thought to it, that you know, this is when something can go horribly wrong that nobody wants to have happen.
I was also thinking, hearing Nicole's silence, that she was uncomfortable with some of what we're talking about. So, Nicole, jump with me in the helicopter. Let's go to 5,000 feet for a minute and look at this. 10 years from now, God forbid something bad were to happen in that car.
Well, no. See, what's been happening is I don't let him go. I just don't tell her the real reason
but
why.
Doesn't she deserve to know the real reason why she's putting her own children in danger when she drives this way?
And my point is, I don't want you feeling social pressure to be nice to her, and that should be more important than the way she's actually driving the car.
Mm-hmm.
And too often in our world, we're worried about what people are going to think of us. And my point was going to be, 10 years from now, you may or may not even be friendly with this woman anymore, but at least you'll be able to rest comfortably knowing that you've raised something to her for her to consider, and maybe she'll be driving better. And like Louise said, maybe her own kids or the other
right.
kids that she's driving around will be alive because you have the conversation with her.
Right. That's a really good point.
All right.
Just say, you know, one of the good terms now that's better than bad is distracted. You're just kind of a distracted driver. Have you noticed that? And say it with a little bit of a laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Take the tension away.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good word. I like that. Distracted is so much nicer than horrible.
Well,
exactly.
Yeah, that's
driver.
What it is.
Like Simon Cowell should try
luck.
That. You're just
good
a distracted
luck.
Singer.
I'm just telling you, Nicole, just remember Edith.
Okay.
Remember Edith, yes.
Let us know what happens.
Okay.
Hey,
Thank you so much.
Want to join us in this conversation,
so
maybe
calling.
Get some free mediation advice, give us a call at 888-531-7171, 888-531-7171. Yeah, and during the week, you can call, too, and leave us a voicemail if you'd like, or an email to talkitover@gmail.com. Some people are just shy, you know. They don't want to actually be on the air with us, so... hey, we've got another email here in our email box. This is very interesting. My dearest friend, I'm sorry, it's from Sandy in Albuquerque. Oh, my hometown. My dearest friend in the whole world is adopted. We're in our mid-30s, and all of a sudden she wants to find her birth parents. I know that it will be a long, tough haul, and when she finally does find them, they may not want to get to know her. I want to be supportive. I understand why this is so important to her, but there's something in me that feels like I should warn her that this might not end happily. What words do I use to tell her I care, that I'm with her, but that she should be realistic? Ooh.
Well, you know, this is all about managing expectations. It's so easy to do it in an indirect way, like Louise was doing with the last caller, and say something like, you know, I really, really want you to know that I hope this works out for you, and I hope it's a wonderful experience. But, you know, I got to tell you what I'm experiencing myself these days. When I get ready to go to a movie, if everybody tells me it's the best movie in the world, I end up disappointed. because I'm expecting the best movie in the world. And if everybody says to me, you know, it didn't really live up to the hype, it wasn't really that great, and I go see it, I'm usually impressed because it's not as bad as my friends led me to believe. And you can have that conversation, Sandy, with your friend and tell her indirectly that what expectations she burdens this with are going to have more to do with how she experiences it than the actual outcome itself.
I don't really follow that. What do you mean by that?
Our reactions to the events in our lives are more important than the events themselves. If Sandy has expectations around this and thinks it's going to be fairy tale and there's going to be music playing and they're going to give her a big hug and they're going to run through fields of flowers to, you know, to see each other, then Sandy's going to be disappointed. And Sandy's friend rather is going to be disappointed. It sounds like Sandy wants to have a conversation with her about managing those expectations. And what the best advice she can give her friend is go in open-minded. Don't have an expectation that it's going to be wonderful. Don't go in with a whole bunch of fear that they may reject you. Just go in and say, hey, for me, I had to find you, and see how they respond. And if you don't have expectation, you won't end up disappointed.
And Sandy, I think, needs to understand that her friend already knows what could happen or what the outcome could be. I don't think you have to oversell how careful she needs to be with her emotions and her level of excitement going into it, because there's reasons why children are put up for adoption, and they're valid reasons to give the person, the child, a better home. So any number of things could be out there, and I think Sandy's friend is aware of that. You can gently remind your friend.
I hope so, though. This is a pretty emotional thing, though, for most people. This is somebody who, she's in her 30s, so for 30, 35 years, she's been building up the expectation about what it's going to be when she finally finds them, when she finally meets them. And the problem is, even though she's in her mid-30s and she's a full-grown adult, the likelihood that she's going to be walking in that door like a little girl is really high, which means she's going to be susceptible to being driven by her emotions rather than her rational thinking. So to the extent that she can go in and just be the grown-up that she is, the confident adult, and not be seeking their approval, but just meet them on an even ground, then she'll have a much higher probability of a positive experience with them.
And, you know, Sandy says, my dearest friend in the whole wide world is adopted. So maybe, Sandy, if I could give a little advice here, maybe go with her. When she goes for that meeting, just drive her there. Sit in the car. Don't insert yourself into the situation, into the actual meet, but be there for her right before and right after. You know, just being there and giving that feeling of comfort and having a friend on your side, it means all the world to people.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's a good, really good advice, Diane.
Yeah.
It sure does. All right.
So should we go to the phones?
Yes, we have Jill on the line. Is that not
Jill?
Correct?
Hello.
Hello, Jill.
Hi, Jill.
Thanks for
Hi.
Calling Talk It Over. How can we help?
Well, I was wondering if you would have some helpful hints. I have some neighbors that live across the street. They party every weekend. They are very loud, and they go sometimes till 3 in the morning. And the problem is I work with one of the people that live in the house. So I've tried to be anonymous. I wrote a note, and I didn't sign it, and it didn't help.
Did you write it with your left hand so they wouldn't recognize your handwriting?
Yeah. I'll do the next note. I'll do that.
Okay.
And then I did call the police, I think, 2 times, and it would get better after the police came, but I'm sort of fearful. I can't talk to them face-to-face, or I feel like I can't because I don't, you know, want to cause problems in my home life. And
I think I hear them.
Here come the police once again.
Here come the police again.
Right now. They're raging.
So I don't know. I just, you know, what is a way that I can solve this without making enemies? Because they know that someone is being bothered, and it hasn't changed the way they do things.
So. Part of the problem might just be that it's impersonal to them at this point, that it's some nameless, faceless person who calls the police, and they probably think it's some, you know,
some sleeper.
Yeah.
It couldn't possibly be their friend Jill.
So annoying. You sleeper.
So one option, and I hear that you're concerned, and I'm going to use that word rather than afraid to talk with them. But it, truthfully, if you've tried everything anonymous, you've tried invoking the authority of the police, the only thing left to really do other than move is to sit down with them and say, hey guys, can I ask you a favor? I know the police come sometimes at night and things like that, but I'm just, you know, I'm your neighbor. I'm your coworker. I got to go to bed and it's getting a little late. I don't want to, you know, be a killjoy and, you know, all of that, but I got to be able to go to sleep. Can you turn it down some or close up some of the windows or, you know, something
so
like that?
So you're telling her to drop the anonymity and just come right out.
Yeah, I don't think that you need to say, hey, I'm the one who's been calling the cops and you're not getting the hint. But I think you can say, look, you know, again, expressing your own needs. I need to get to sleep. I've got to go to work tomorrow or, you know, something like that. I don't want to, you know, throw cold water in your party, but guys, I need a break, please.
Lija, let me ask you a question. This is a common problem, noisy neighbors.
Sure.
And you were speaking earlier about how we all, you know, as free humans have the right to wave our arms around until they knock into somebody else. What is the law, or is it different in every state, but regarding partying and loud music, is there a time when it's supposed to be turned down? What is the law state?
Most cities have their own ordinances. They have their own rules, their own times built in. I could probably guess what it is in our neighborhood. I think it's something like construction.
And decibel level. They also have a decibel level.
Yes, yes, yes. Absolutely.
For different times of the day and night. Right.
So the best advice that we could give listeners is to check with their local authorities and find out what the rules are. And, you know, again, to the extent that there are neighbor meetings, that's always helpful because, of course, these are the people who probably don't get up out of bed to come to the neighbor meetings.
No, but she can't be the only one who's irritated.
Exactly. That's just it. You get more strength in numbers. And that's how we let people know that you're bothering all of us. I, you know, just this morning myself, I was in bed reading the newspaper. It's my one morning to sleep in. And some kids at some house down the block who probably didn't have parents at home at 9 o'clock in the morning started cranking Billy Idol and screaming and yelling and dancing and whooping it up. And
which song?
White Wedding. Billy Idol.
It was White Wedding.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, and now fortunately I didn't have to go down the street and talk it over with them. And it was a one-time occurrence, unlike poor Jill's situation that seems to go on and on. So Jill, let me ask you this. You're still with us?
Yes, I am.
I thought I heard you laughing in the background. So tell me, do you feel like you could comfortably approach them?
I think that's my problem. That just feels really terrifying to me.
Okay.
But I understand what you're saying, that the others, I'm afraid that I'll still be ineffective and exposed.
Okay, so then let's ask this. Have you talked to any of the other neighbors?
No, I haven't.
Okay, that might not be a bad thing.
See, this is where I would go, Lee J. Yeah. Go, Lee J. Give her that advice. Yeah.
See, secretly, Wheezy and Diane sit in the background and wait for me to stumble upon one of these that works.
Well, the one that we like.
Yeah.
You know?
I would quietly go around to some of the other neighbors that you know and say something subtle like, wow, did you hear that party last night? My goodness. And have them say, yeah, it kept me up all night. And then say, maybe we should all get together and, you know, talk to them or something like that. And what you can do is initiate the communication amongst the neighbors, but not have to be the volunteer to be the front person to go knock on the door.
Yeah,
and even if three or four of them go knock on the door, you don't have to be one of those three or four. But
I
you
would
can,
prefer
it's
that.
It's got to be a really large male in your neighborhood who can take this hit.
They're like an off-duty cop
or something.
Yes, I like this. Security guard, somebody with a uniform.
And
you know what? You know what, Jill? I would say that your neighbors would understand if you said, you know, I'm with you. It's really annoying. It's really I can't sleep at night. But see, I work with them. So can you guys help me out here? I mean, I'm with you, but can your husband go or can you go instead? And I think they'd understand that.
Okay. All right. That sounds like something I could do.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't know this to be true, Jill, but common sense tells me that if the police make too many more trips out there, they're going to take matters into their own hands.
Okay.
Yeah. But good luck.
All right. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for calling Talk It Over.
Yeah, call us and let us know how it goes.
Okay, try to get some sleep, Jill. Yeah. Hey, if you got a problem like Jill's or any kind of problem, give us a call here at Talk It Over, 888-531-7171. If we're already off the air, that's fine. Leave a voicemail and we'll address it next program out. 888-531-7171. Can I just tell you, do you think my next door neighbor is listening?
Oh, my God.
Because they have been. Now, Louise, you were at my house not long ago. You remember they're building that big stone wall next door?
Yes.
Because the hill was starting to slide down with the rain.
Can you spell ugly?
They started last Saturday morning with the jackhammers, with the, I don't know, what do you call that thing? It's like a bulldozer, 7 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, no.
I was so mad. I actually tried to call the neighbors, and they weren't there. They had gone away for the weekend, which I suppose that's why they, you know,
of
the
course
workers
they weren't
came
there.
So early. Yeah. So I called the police.
You did?
I did. I called the police. I said, you know, I don't want to give you my name. But they made me give me my name. But they said, okay, we'll send a cruiser out there. And they did. They sent a cruiser out and the guys stopped for an hour.
Good.
Apparently they can start loud work at 8 o'clock here in my neighborhood, even on a Saturday. Yeah. So they did stop for an hour, but I couldn't go back to sleep.
Our neighborhood is 7:30 and they haven't stopped building in the 7 years since I moved in. One house finishes, the next one starts to go up because it's a relatively new neighborhood. 7:30 every morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's always near your house?
It's all within earshot.
Oh, see, I'm a real late night person.
I'd
rather stick needles in my eyes.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, I don't go to sleep till 12:30, 1 o'clock myself.
Ugh. Yeah.
So if I sound grouchy on the show, you know it's because I'm sleep deprived because of the construction at 7:30 in the morning.
Nah, you sound good. Hey, here's an email in our Talk It Over email box from Joe in Kokomo. Oh, come on. He must have made that up. He writes, okay, my dilemma is simple. I fell in love with a woman who has the longest hair I've ever seen. It's dramatic and fascinating. It's part of why I love her so much. I think her name
however.
Is Rapunzel. it falls just below her knees. Now she is talking about cutting it to shoulder length because she wants, quote, a change. I'm not sure I will love her as much if she does that. How do I tell her that without her thinking me a shallow son of a you-know-what?
Hey, Crystal Gale, don't it make my brown eyes blue if you cut your long hair?
Wow.
Don't call her Rapunzel, first of all.
Who would fall in love with a girl for her? Just because that means there's no other girl in the world for you if that's the only, you know, defining feature that attracts you. Because
I have no answers to this.
Crystal Gale, really, that's it, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's look at his email. I mean, if you look at it really, and Joe, you got to pardon me, but you've put it in here for us. You've basically called yourself a shallow son of a you-know-what. And then said, how can I not sound like I really am because I'm in love with her just because of her hair? You know, if Joe were on the phone with us, I'd have to ask him how long he's been with her and what other things, you know, attracted him to her. But
he could tie her up with her hair to prevent her from going to get a haircut.
Well, and maybe that also plays into why he likes her so much.
Oh, because he ties her up with
her. They do that. I mean, you know.
They? What parties do you go to?
But you're right, Lee J. He does literally call himself what we're all thinking he is, right?
Well, yeah. And what I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and hope that what he's really trying to say is, I really find this attractive and I don't want her to change that drastically. And this is a simple conversation where he sits down and says, look, I got to tell you, you know how much I love your long hair and I know you want to change. And I certainly don't want to affect your change by telling you what I'd like, but I do want you to know that I like your hair long. And, you know, it doesn't always have to be to your knees, but if it goes to your shoulders, that's pretty drastic. And can we talk about something else? Can we talk about some compromise, you know, or doing it in stages, so at least so that I can get used to it?
I know, Lee J, that this makes good sense, but what can I go a little bit deeper and ask you, or Diane, what you think it is that makes us fall in love in the first place? Well, this is a very difficult question, of course, but it can't just, if you really truly in love the person, it can't just be their hair.
Of course. You know, I'm one of these guys who just doesn't understand people who have a quote unquote type. I mean, before I got married, I dated women of every size and shape and height and hair color. And I mean, I never had a type.
But not since you've been married?
No, never. Okay. Just one. She's about 5'2" and has lovely brunette hair and dark brown eyes.
See, that's like my husband, too. He just loves women.
That you're 5'2" and have brown
heavy,
eyes.
Thin, old, young. He just finds women so attractive. But this man seems to be much shallower, Lee J.
Well, I don't know if it's that or if he just hasn't let himself go and recognize that he may have been attracted to her for the hair. But if he's with a girlfriend who he says they fell in love with her because of her long hair, he's got to do some deeper soul searching because, we call people shallow like it's a bad thing. I look at shallow as just meaning he hasn't yet attained the rest of the depth that's available to him in his life.
Wow, Lee J, that was intense.
Say that again. What was that? What did you say?
That he, to the extent that people are shallow, it's just a state of growth. I mean, almost every 13-year-old that we know is shallow because they haven't grown deeper into their depth and their understanding. And if this is a guy who's, let's just guess and say he's in his early 20s or something, and he still thinks that that's what drives him to a woman, he just hasn't found more depth in himself and probably hasn't had enough deep contact with a woman or her specifically to know that there's more there. And I hate to say this, but trauma in a relationship is a thing that brings people closer at a deeper level. I had a girlfriend who I was crazy about who had a car accident on the way home from our third date. And I'm convinced, and she was almost killed. I'm convinced that brought us deeper and closer together. And it fast forwarded our relationship to a point of a much deeper, richer connection.
Edith driving?
Anyhow, so they may just not have experienced enough together yet that he sees more than the long hair, and time will take care of some of that.
Okay, very good. Karen, are you there?
Hello, how are you?
Thank you for calling Talk It Over. How can we help?
I've got like a little issue going on at my office.
Mm-hmm.
I am in charge of a few people in the office. And some people, it seems that when they are hired to do a job, they've got maybe blinders on their eyes, kind of like a racehorse. Mm-hmm. You put blinders on so they can only look straight ahead. They don't see the whole picture, the whole thing that needs to be done. So these particular people, I would love it if they could take these blinders off and know that if they're dealing with a couple things on their desk, that it maybe affects other people, not just doing their one little job, but do something a little bit better than other people.
Give us an example of what you mean by having blinders on. Like, what are they not allowing themselves to see?
Oh, let's see. They have, say you've got a couple reports in front of you and you're working on one specific one. And the one that's off to the right is something that affects maybe three other people. But instead of giving it to them so they can start working on it or getting it out of the way, they're only dealing with what's in front of them because, hey, that's not my job.
Now we're down to the crux of it, Karen.
They've got little blinders on. They only see what's straight ahead of them.
They only see what they want to see.
My dad would have said, he's a real union guy. Only do one thing at a time. People in the unions don't start writing.
And we're not unions, so I can't say that.
Well, Karen,
so how does she talk it over, Lee J?
There are a couple of things. First of all, part of it is the company culture and how the supervisors are setting everybody's expectations. Because, frankly, one of the things that needs to happen is you all have to have a quick meeting on a Monday morning or something and lay out all the priorities for the week so that this new person knows that you and three other people are waiting for this report, you know, by Tuesday so you can get it done by Friday. And coordinating all of that is important. But it goes deeper than that. There's an old story, several thousand years old, apparently, about a guy who walks up to a gentleman who's cutting this huge stone and asks him what you're doing. And the guy says, I'm cutting this stone in the shape of a square because that's what they told me to do. And then the same gentleman walks along and finds another guy doing the same thing and says, what are you doing? And he says, I'm building a stone that's going to be part of the greatest pyramid in the greatest city that's ever existed. And the difference between how those two people's job was laid out to them has everything to do with their motivation and their perception about how they fit into the whole. So at some point, a strong supervisor in your office is going to say, okay, let's put our heads together here. New person, those four people need that report by when, and you're going to tell them by when. And then they're going to coordinate all of that. So to a certain extent, it might be about having a conversation with the supervisor, not in a way that tattles on this new person or anything, but in a way that says, we need to work better as a team, and here's one example of what I'm talking about. How can I help support you in doing that? Is something like that feasible?
That sounds like it would be very helpful, yes.
And, you know, the other thing is you can, of course, approach that person directly yourself, but that's a little bit more dangerous because then they're liable to take it personally, like you have a thing with them or that you're not happy with the way they're working or something like that.
That is exactly the reaction that happened when I tried that.
Yeah, and, you know, to a certain extent, you just have people doing work different ways. You sit down and watch people eat, and some people will eat the entire chicken, and then they'll eat the mashed potatoes, and then they'll eat the peas, and they can't touch each other.
And
other people just smear it all together and, you know, take the chicken and swipe it through the mashed potatoes and dunk at the peas. And to a certain extent, you got to allow people to operate in the way that they're operating because we all operate differently. But if it's affecting you, then you've got to have a conversation with whoever's going to make that change. And if it's not that person directly, it may have to be the supervisor.
Yes.
So that's how you talk that one over.
Well, thank you.
Good luck, Karen.
Thank you so much for calling. All right,
so,
Diane.
We start with the news. We like to end with the news.
Sure.
Have you heard this story in the news about Jesse Jackson getting caught on tape with a microphone on using, yes, wait for it, the N-word.
Oh. This seems to have made a
few news. Leader in America, and he's using the N-word? What's that all about?
Well, he gets to because he's black? No?
Yeah, but come on. You know, people who use that word and lots of other racially charged words to me are just not people that I feel I can talk over anything with because, well, as Karen just said, they have blinders on.
Yeah, when somebody's using racially charged slurs in any kind of a context, that's certainly an indication that they don't really want to talk it over. They want shock value or something like that. When you're having a conversation, first of all, let's back up. Society places value on words, right? We've decided there's a word that starts with F and a word that starts with S that we're not supposed to say in public because those are deemed bad words, so we don't say
them. The George Carlin words.
Yes, exactly. The seven words. Yes, exactly. We've decided in the last 40 years at some point that the N-word is one of those words. So for people to use it now means they're either being careless or they're being hurtful intentionally and knowingly because it's not a secret anymore.
Well, I think when people use those words, it's because they want to be hurtful. They don't just want to be careless. And also, whether or not it's just a word, African Americans find that word offensive. That's a good, very good reason not to use it.
Yeah.
Now, Diane, did you did read about Jamie Masada wanting to fine Jesse Jackson $50 for using?
Well, explain. Jamie Masada runs the Laugh Factory.
The
is
owner
that
of the
it?
Laugh Factory. Yes, comedy club in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And what? How does the story go, Diane?
He finds his comedians who use that word, finds them $50. And this all happened because, what was the guy's name who used the N-word and
Michael
it was
Richards.
Caught on a cell phone?
Oh, Michael Richards.
Richards.
Yeah.
Michael Richards, right. And so after that, Jamie Masada said, any comedian who comes into my shop and uses the N-word is going to get fined $50. Now, comedians don't make much money, so they're real careful not to use that word.
Jesse Jackson is not very funny, so I don't think he qualifies for this.
I don't think he's going to be on the stage over there at the comedy club, do you?
Wouldn't it be great if he were, though? Wouldn't it be great if he had like a tight five? You know, just
some
zing,
tomatoes
zang,
and
boom.
Yeah.
Okay, so for those of us who don't do stand-up, a tight five means?
5 minutes of really killer stand-up that you might do on the Tonight Show or Letterman.
I can see Jesse Jackson doing a tight five.
Hey, Lee J., in your mediation, just real quick before we run out of time here, have you ever had to mediate with someone like that, somebody who uses the N-word against their adversary?
Only in private. In my experience, people know better, and especially the way I set the mediations up at the top, people know better than to do that across the table at somebody else. But what they do is they vent to me in private a lot, and I know that they're just venting, and so we move right past it.
Wow.
Well, okay then.
All right. Well, this has been a very illuminating program. Thank you so much. I want to thank Lee J. Berman, Diane Diamond. our engineer Matt Sigman and producer Trish and our webmaster Joe Pierce. Thank you all so much. And with that, Talk It Over is over.